It's HPR, All Things Considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. There has been a lot of coverage recently of the confirmation hearing of Trump nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. Republicans hope to confirm the judge, who would nudge the high court further to the right in time for the first day of the court's new term, which is October 1st. And recently, HuffPost ran an article that looked at how Kavanaugh handled a particular type of case, and that is cases involving protecting wildlife. And it included analysis from Bill Snape. He is an assistant dean at American University's Washington College of Law, and he's also senior counsel with the nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity, who have been our guests on the air previously on Helping Hand. Snape looked at how Kavanaugh handled 18 wildlife species related cases, and he found that 95% of the time, or in 17 of those 18 cases, Kavanaugh decided against protections for the wildlife. The article framed the analysis of his track record on decisions relating to species protection with a look at a pending case before the Supreme Court in which the world's largest timber company will be going against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and a federal decision to designate 1,500 acres of land in Louisiana as critical habitat for the dusky gopher frog. And it may be an animal you've never heard of, but it's reported to be down to just 100 living individuals and living in the United States. And so we're really excited today to welcome to the show Bill Snape, and I've got him on the line right now. Hey, Bill, thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. Great to be here.
And great to have you here. And before we even get deeper into it, let's just back up a moment. And my boss had asked me a really interesting question the other day, and that was, how often do wildlife-related cases even get up to the Supreme Court level?
Yeah, that's a good question. Not that often. It obviously varies, but I would say looking back on the last 30 years, just calculating, I'd say about once every 5 years or so, you'll see either an Endangered Species Act case or a migratory bird case or a marine mammal case make its way to the Supreme Court, but it is not every year for sure.
Okay, so this case that's about to happen with the frog would be like the first time in several years that any kind of animal-related thing has gotten that high.
Certainly at this level of importance, yes. And it's not only just endangered species and wildlife, it's endangered species critical habitat, you know, sort of a central pillar of the act.
Right, and that's a very good point, because it's without their habitat, the animals can't possibly live, and protecting those habitats can often be just as critical as saving the individual critters. And so you did something pretty remarkable. You took a look at this guy Kavanaugh's record as it related to animals, sort of dialing in on what he had done. And I guess you're saying over the course of his career so far, he's handled 18 wildlife species related cases at some point?
That's right. So he right now is a judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He's been on that court since 2006. George Bush II nominated him. The Senate confirmed him. And that shows you, even at the D.C. Circuit, 18 wildlife cases in 12 years, not that many even reached that level. And what's interesting, and it was all sorts of wildlife cases, endangered species, marine mammals, migratory birds, NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act cases, you know, it ran the gamut. And actually, he never completely ruled for a wildlife species in a case. There were two cases that I called split decisions, and I was sort of giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, if the truth be known. But in the vast majority of cases, not only cases that he wrote, but cases that he voted upon, there was this, not antipathy, it wasn't like a, you know, drooling, vicious, you know, disregard for wildlife, but it was a seemingly lack of appreciation for what wildlife and wildlife habitat and natural systems do. And that theme became very apparent when I read all 18 decisions.
Let's dial in on the two that you thought were sort of split. Describe each of those cases and what happened.
Yes. So in the one case had to do with a development in the southeast that was impacting both a bird species and indigo snake in Florida. And he ruled against the wood stork, which was the bird species at issue in that case. And so I gave him a half loss on that. And on the indigo snake, what was interesting is there was overwhelming biological evidence in the administrative record that this snake was imperiled, that this project was going to hurt the snake. And so Kavanaugh actually did sort of halt the project for a time being. to have it go through what's called Endangered Species Act consultation. But what's interesting is he didn't actually order that a biological opinion by the expert agency be written. He just sort of said, go back and do the process. And so even on that case, when he sort of ruled for the indigo snake, he really wasn't affirming the biological evidence in the record. He wasn't speaking up for the snake. And I've seen many other Section 7 cases like that, that where a judge will order a biological opinion to be written, will order the full consultation to reach its end. Here, Kavanaugh really did sort of the bare minimum, and he sort of had to. The record was clear that the snake was really going to be impacted by this project.
This is what, like a building development? They wanted to put something on land where the animal lived? Is that the...
It was a huge development. Actually, let me pull this up. It was wetlands outside rapidly developing Tampa, Florida. The Army Corps of Engineers have been found to violate the Clean Water Act and protecting wetlands. And there were a few thousand acres at stake here. And so... It was a wetland development by the Army Corps of Engineers to dredge and fill wetlands for development, for business condo development.
Has that been dredged and filled and developed now?
It actually has been, and there was some habitat put aside for the snake, which is why I gave him, you know, some partial credit. But the snake, it never did actually get the full protection that it needed, even though Kavanaugh had the authority to order it in that case.
And then there was a bird, it sounded like?
So there was a wood stork also, and he found that the Army Corps of Engineers had done just fine with the wood stork. He did not give any protection to the wood stork that was additional in that case. It was a Sierra Club case in that instance.
Army Corps Engineers were the defendants?
Exactly. The Sierra Club was suing the Army Corps of Engineers. I'm giving him credit that he at least said that the indigo snake was going to be impacted, and that they at least had to go back and talk to each other. I did not give him full credit for the indigo snake because he didn't order the biological opinion that the record clearly stated. So that was a case where I gave him actually one quarter credit. That was of the 18 cases that he's ruled for, he was against wildlife 17.25 times. That's one of the 0.25 is right in that case, and you got a 0.25 for the indigo snake. On the second case, which actually had to do with, this was actually a very difficult case for me to assess, as it turns out. And again, this is an instance where I was being very generous to Judge Kavanaugh. This was a wildlife import case where there actually had been some hunting of a species, but it had been done lawfully. And the import permit had been slowed down by the Fish and Wildlife Service to a sort of an absurd degree. It was just a permitting problem where the agency hadn't processed it. It was a species that was not in danger of extinction or imperilment. It had been done with laws of the country. It was in compliance with the Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species, whatever one might think of hunting. And so in that instance, even though he actually allowed the trade of some of those species to go through that the conservation groups had objected, the fact that he actually did call out the Fish and Wildlife Service on its overall permitting delays on species in the trade that actually were lawful, I actually gave him half point on that, a half case on that. And I think what both those cases indicate is that I didn't want him to go over. You know, I was trying to not be judgmental and biased toward him. I was trying to look for instances where I saw some judicial independence. And I think, Dave, the real theme to all these cases is he already has his mind made up before the case starts, because there's such a predictability and pattern to his analysis of not understanding the public interest in wildlife, not understanding the value in wildlife, and basically always holding those who would want to protect wildlife to a much higher level of scrutiny that he would give to, let's say, corporate plaintiffs or defendants, or developing plaintiffs or defendants. He's very much in favor of traditional economic development, does not understand sort of modern conservation. When you read all 18 of his decisions, those two were the only ones where there was even a glimmer of hope that this guy understood the importance of wildlife. On all the other cases, it was not only a complete lack of understanding, but sometimes some judicial hostility. For instance, in a case where the American Bird Conservancy had sued the Federal Communications Commission for approving big cell towers in the Washington, D.C. area, the fact that the Federal Communications Commission had admitted that it hadn't looked at all the evidence, that there actually were a lot of birds dying, and they had decided that they were going to go back and look at the issue nationwide, but not in the area of the Gulf of Mexico where the American Bird Conservancy had actually challenged it. Judge Kavanaugh, in a dissent in that case, said that he thought the case ought to be thrown out because the Army Corps of Engineers had agreed to just look at the issue generally. And the two majority judges, in some very pointed rhetoric at their dissent colleagues, said, well, no, just the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers has gone back and look at the issue generally doesn't mean they're going to look at all these specific thousands of birds that have been killed in D.C. and the Gulf of Mexico specifically, which are two areas that the American Bird Conservancy really wanted the Army Corps, the FCC, to look at. And so that was an instance where Kavanaugh was trying to use this issue of rightness, a judicial doctrine that, of course, you know, 99% of the people on the street don't understand, to kick out the American Bird Conservancy, to kick out the conservationists. And he lost that case. And he lost that case because the two majority judges, the judges that decided that case in that 2-1 decision, said, no, these plaintiffs and these birds are still clearly in jeopardy. The agency clearly hasn't done for those birds what the complaint alleges, and we're going to hold that this complaint is still active. We're not going to dismiss the case. We're going to hold the Army Corps, the FCC, we're going to hold their feet to the fire. So that's an example where Judge Kavanaugh went out of his way to try to, you know, hurt a wildlife interest and was rebutted by other federal judges.
And so what are some of the other cases that were where you think it was the most compelling when it comes to somebody listening and they're wondering how on earth could he have gone against this situation or this animal was obviously in peril? Let's talk about some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a really good one is actually an endangered species critical habitat case. And as we mentioned in the early part of the show, that's exactly the issue that's going to be before the Supreme Court on October 1st. And this was an endangered species critical habitat case he decided at the D.C. Circuit about 6 years ago. For the fairy shrimp in California. And as fate would have it, I actually argued that case before him. I was arguing on behalf of the Center for Biological Diversity, which was an intervener in that case. And in that decision, which I have to admit that I lost, and Kavanaugh ruled and wrote the decision against me and against the Fish and Wildlife Service. We had intervened on behalf of the Fish and Wildlife Service. He ruled that even though the Fish and Wildlife Service's best scientific evidence indicated that the fairy shrimp needed this particular plot of land to recover, to actually have a chance to be conserved and to make it, you know, for future generations, which, of course, is the whole point of the Endangered Species Act. So the expert agency opinion was this was the best habitat for recovery for this species. Kavanaugh said the evidence wasn't good enough and actually threw out a number of parcels that just so happened to be owned by rich and powerful private landowners who were able to sue in federal court. And to me, that's a great example of Judge Kavanaugh's arrogance, the fact that he actually thinks he knows more than federal biologists about fairy shrimp habitat. And it also reveals, if you read the decision carefully, just a general hostility and almost a snideness towards the very concept of protecting habitat that might get in the way of economic development just, you know, for a little bit. So that, to me, is a prime example and really a very sort of stage one example of why we don't want this guy on the Supreme Court. He's already ruled against endangered species before. And not only would the endangered case and species case on October 1st be before him, it would be the very first case he would hear if he is confirmed. And of course, that's a big if. We're hoping he is not confirmed. So that would be one example. And just another really quick example before I turn it back to you is, and this has to do with both wildlife and human health, but in a case called the Homer case, which was actually a Clean Air Act case, an interstate pollution case that actually impacted both human health and animal health, that was a part of the administrative record, Judge Kavanaugh ruled that a very elaborate compromise and plan that EPA had developed with all of these states was illegal. And Kavanaugh was eventually overturned by the Supreme Court 6-2. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy, his replacement, the one who's seeking to replace, both ruled against Kavanaugh in this instance. And the impact of Kavanaugh's decision in there was actual, literal human death and injury and destruction of ecosystems. That is exactly what EPA had calculated month by month, year by year. Any delay in implementing these clean air strategies was, you know, we're talking about massive coal pollution. And Kavanaugh ruled against it. And there was a period of 18 months to 2-year delay where the old polluting rule was in effect, literally because of Kavanaugh. And this is an instance because the Supreme Court overturned him, and overturned him with pretty, I think, direct language, that we begin to see that Kavanaugh, he's not the strict constructionist he claims he is. You know, he piously says that he'll just follow the law. He doesn't make the law. Here was an instance where the Supreme Court said he had made up law, that he had held EPA to a standard that was nowhere in the statute. So I think when you look at those two cases, particularly the Endangered Species Critical Habitat case, where he's already questioned the judgment of federal biologists, and then a Clean Air case where many states and the EPA come up with a massively complicated and effective a Clean Air solution, and he rules against it, and then is overturned by the Supreme Court, those two to me are pretty clear indications that any environmental case you'd get before the Supreme Court, I think, would be bad for the environment, and certainly as it relates to wildlife.
The size of the creature came up in one of his responses, like something that was, I'm paraphrasing, but you'll be able to add to it, that this animal that was only the size of an ant or something like that, and that they had only found one. He was sort of making it seem like, how could we stand in the way of construction over a creature that was as small as an ant?
Exactly, and that was the fairy shrimp case I was just talking about. That was the D.C. Circuit Endangered Species Act critical habitat case that he decided in 2011. And yes, that was your quote and your summary is a great example of that mocking tone that he has towards wildlife conservation and, frankly, any type of public interest protection, but in this instance, fairy shrimp conservation and very important wet habitat in California. This was, you know, let's talk about the fairy shrimp in a larger context, which is that the fairy shrimp does represent a very quickly vanishing wetland, wet habitat in California that's incredibly rare and has a lot of other benefits than just to the fairy shrimp. It's just the fairy shrimp obviously is important in its own right. So that to me was, you know, a sign of his ecological ignorance more than anything else.
Were there any cases relating to wildlife that were killed outside of the U.S., bringing trophies in, anything like that?
Well, that actually was that other case I talked about very early in the show. And let me scroll that up in my database here. But that was that mixed case where it wasn't just one instance of imports. Let me pull this up now. You think I remember off the top of my head that some of these details.
No, I understand.
Yeah. So what happened, and the Sierra Club actually had intervened or wrote an amicus decision on behalf of the importer. It was called Conservation Force versus Jewell. So Jewell was Obama's Secretary of Interior. It was a D.C. Circuit case in 2013. And actually, in this case, let me just read you my summary. Judge Merrick Garland actually wrote this decision. So Kavanaugh here did not write the decision. He just voted with the other judges. And that's one thing to point out about any court of appeals, which is, there are three judges on every decision, or most of them, and so sometimes the judge is just voting with the majority. Mm. Sometimes the judge is actually writing the majority decision or writing a dissent. Here, Kavanaugh was going along with the majority, and the majority happened to be written by Judge Garland, who was President Obama's Supreme Court pick, who the Republicans snubbed 2 years ago. And they ruled against plaintiffs, backed by the Sierra Club, who were challenging Fish and Wildlife Service protection, management, and import of the Markhor, which is a wild goat that inhabits Pakistan. And despite repeated delays in responding to plaintiffs, the majority panel held that because the cause of action to downlist the species was moot, the plaintiffs possessed no standing to challenge the Fish and Wildlife Service's considerable delays in processing the permits. So here, the reason we actually gave Kavanaugh the half point was that he actually didn't allow part of that import to go through because it was the Fish and Wildlife Service had already made a decision. And so I gave him that half point because by him saying that the cause of action to downlist the species was moot and we didn't want the species to be downlisted, that at least he gave that goat a little bit of protection. But he did that in the context of a much larger situation that I'm not sure he was arguing on behalf of the goat. I think he was just arguing on behalf of common sense, truth be known.
A trophy, so as a killed overseas and someone trying to bring it back in.
Exactly. And in that case, he actually, for that goat, did not let the goat in, but not because of it was for the goat. It was because what would trigger that import that this this other cause of action to downlist the protection of that particular species. He said that that particular action to downlist the species was moot. Therefore, that particular batch did not have to, it was not going to be imported in, and in that instance, sort of gave a split decision.
So overall, when you looked at it, was there one case in particular that you found really upset you or seemed like the animal had really been given a raw deal?
You know, there is one, and it's not as tangible as the way you just asked the question with, you know, an animal's blood, you know, dripping on the street, anything horrible like that. But it was an instance where he had made a decision about swans, mute swans on the East Coast in Maryland, which sometimes actually can be a nuisance, but actually also are now a part of some modern ecosystems. And so dealing with mute swans on the East Coast has its management challenges. And what was interesting about that decision was that in the first time, I read a lot of court decisions in my 30 years of being a lawyer. I don't think I've ever remembered a case where the deciding judge in a case, and here Kavanaugh was the deciding judge, not only writes the majority opinion, but then writes his own concurring opinion. And the only reason I can think why he did that was because while he had been assigned, perhaps randomly, to decide this case, and so all the judges agreed on the ultimate issue at hand, which is that in this instance, the state management plan for the tundra swan was acceptable, and there actually were going to be some mute swans that would be killed, but that actually most of them would stay alive. So they upheld the Maryland conservation plan, which of course upset some people that any swans would be killed, but that plan had gone through scientific rigor, and so they all upheld that, which at this point in time is not a controversial decision at all. That would be sort of a common administrative record type decision. But then he wrote this concurring opinion, and he wrote this concurring opinion saying that the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which was the treaty that was the underlying issue in this case, that the treaties themselves deserved no deference when interpreting what the United States statute says and means. And at first blush, when someone would say that, goes, well, okay, whatever, that just sounds complicated, and okay, some judge thinks that. But if you really think about what he was saying, it was actually absurd. It was absurd, A, that he was writing the separate opinion. Why was he writing both the majority and the concurrence? But then on the substance itself, the only reason we have a Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which is a 1918 statute, and it's been amended many times since then, but it's a 1918 statute, is because we entered into a 1916 Migratory Bird Treaty with the United Kingdom relating to bird conservation between the United States and Canada. And we've signed subsequent treaties with Mexico, Soviet Union, now Russia, and Japan. And so what Kavanaugh was saying was that even though, and it had nothing even really to do with this case, but he just went and wrote this concurring opinion saying that he just wanted to make it clear that if there was ever a conflict between the Migratory Bird Treaty Act itself, the U.S. statute, and the Migratory Bird Treaties, which were the treaties that we negotiate, that the treaties were irrelevant. And I read that concurring opinion over and over again. I still think he's wrong. I still don't get it. I still don't think he gets it. And what I think he was trying to do was he was trying to, because there has been actually over the last 100 years or so since 1918 and 19, so we're at 100 years of celebrating that great conservation treaty. You're actually the first real big wildlife treaty this country ever signed. Because I think what he was seeing was that the treaty language actually has some language that could be read to be more expansive than where the United States now is, which is not to say that that was a conflict in that case. It was not a conflict in that case. That's why those two other judges would not join his decision. But I think that he had plotted it out. I think he had, in his own sordid way, strategically decided that he didn't want migratory birds get any more protection. Gosh darn it. And he wrote this ridiculous opinion that thankfully no one's ever picked up on. To this point, I don't think it's actually, you know, really come to a head. But, like, why did he write that decision? Why would you possibly do that? And, I don't know if he hates birds or not, but he certainly doesn't get birds. He doesn't get bird conservation. He doesn't get habitat conservation. And what he does get is multinational corporate and big business quarterly profits. You know, this is like a guy just, you know, out of, you know, Warren Harding and right before the Great Depression. He just, that is his mindset of how the world works. And so that's probably the best example, because from a legal point of view, his position was really just so preposterous. And the only explanation of why he would stake out this preposterous position is that somehow he had been convinced that he needed to protect the, you know, some sort of weird vanguard on that issue and not let those insane migratory bird treaties, you know, do something bad.
It was almost like saying, no matter what we agreed to, we'll go against our own agreement of the treaty if there's some U.S. statute that looks different.
Right, or if we can convince Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, or whoever, you know, Republican hacks in power at the time. And I say hacks on purpose, I'll get back to that in a second, you know, that they reserve the right, those future Republican Congresses, to weaken those treaties if they darn well want to. You know, we're not going to abide by those things Woodrow Wilson did, for goodness sake. We're going to do whatever we want to do in this age. And you know, I don't like saying the word Republican hack. I do remember a day when there were many Republican conservationists, but I think the other thing we really have to remember when you look at Brett Kavanaugh is that for his entire career, and he and I are actually about the same age, he has worked for the Republican Party establishment. He has worked for Ken Starr. He has worked for George Bush II. You know, and so even his position on executive privilege, which I know has nothing to do with wildlife, is this sort of constant bailing out of the big powers that be. And of course, we all know, looking at wildlife conservation, the big powers that be are exactly why we got ourselves into the trouble we are with wildlife and endangered species. It's a mindset, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. This lack of appreciation, this lack of understanding of any type of a natural world. I mean, you know, forget about Aldo Leopold. Forget about, you know, some of the great ecological thinkers. He needs to take biology 101.
And in this case, as a final note that's coming up, did I read this right? You guys are going to be supporting U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in this upcoming?
We are. And it's a very sort of odd political situation, because this is a case where the private landowner, Weyerhaeuser, the biggest timber company in the world, brought this case when Obama was in, you know, that administration was in power. And the litigation was deep enough in the litigation, and the Court of Appeals had already decided on behalf of the endangered species, by the way, in the Fifth Circuit, that by the time the Trump administration came in, it was the solicitor of the United States, it was the Uber lawyers who actually decided to stick with the Obama administration. So this is actually a very odd case on October 1st, where the Trump administration is actually holding true to the Obama position on critical habitat, and that has made it a very interesting dynamic. And of course, the worry is if Kavanaugh's on that court, he's going to get the signal, and he clearly will rule against endangered species. But yes, on October 1st, not only will Kavanaugh, if he's on the bench, be the deciding vote, it's a very mixed up bunch of characters. But the thing I worry about on October 1st is that lurking in the background on October 1st is this idea of cost-benefit analyses and how you have to use cost-benefit analyses, because cost-benefit analyses do have to be done for critical habitat designations. I think with the court the way it is now, I think if Kennedy were on the court, for instance, still, I feel very confident we would win that case 5-4, maybe even 6-3, maybe even get the Chief Justice. I don't know. He's the new swing vote. But with Kavanaugh, he has made it one of his claims to have this sort of rabid view of cost-benefit analysis, where lakes and streams and oceans and wetlands and frogs get zero or close to zero value. So actually, as it relates to this case, it's not only an Endangered Species Act case, which Kavanaugh has hostility to, it's got cost-benefit analyses lurking, which is another one of Kavanaugh's little favorite issues. And so really, that the stakes couldn't be higher, really ever, for endangered species if Kavanaugh is confirmed or not. I mean, you know, there's many issues that you hear about with Kavanaugh in the news right now, abortion and torture and lying to Congress about stolen documents, all sorts of things that they're talking about. But the very first case that he would decide is endangered species. And so I've been trying to tell people, you know, this film, Kavanaugh, is about extinction. It is about a worldview of nature, of what about our greatest court in the land, how they're going to view nature. And as I said a few minutes ago about the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, 100 years ago, Oliver Wendell Holmes upheld the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. The same powers today that try to get down wildlife and habitat that they were added 100 years ago. Well, man, if Kavanaugh's in there, I don't think he's any Oliver Wendell Holmes, and I would be really scared for endangered species, not only for the frog case, but for all cases for 30 years to come.
And you'll be there doing the work with them for the... Are you going to be part?
Well, so we have filed a brief in that case, the Center for Biological Diversity. We will not be arguing. We decided to let the Fish and Wildlife Service handle all of that, and it's going to be warehoused by the Fish and Wildlife Service. Our brief has already been filed. Many amici brief from all over the country have been filed, and so we'll just have to wait and see. And the other thing about the Supreme Court is, and this is just a random factoid, is that, you know, if Kavanaugh's not confirmed, which, of course, is my hope and our and many people's hope that he's not confirmed, at least delayed, there have been large portions of United States history where we've only had 8 justices on the court. Many, many times, sometimes for over a year. So this idea that we would have 8 justices on the court for a while until we figure out who really a good ninth would be is not uncommon. Has happened just 2 years ago with Merrick Garland, if we recall. And so, you know, that's another message I have, which is, hey, let's not make a final decision now. Let's wait a few months at least till the election. Let's at least get by October 1st, for goodness sake. We don't need to rush to confirm Brett Kavanaugh just because Mitch McConnell's got a flight back home to Kentucky. But we'll see. The next couple of weeks are going to be very intense in Washington, D.C. over this. Certainly the Hawaiian delegation has been awesome, Senator Hirono particularly, but it's going to be tight, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, and that is a particular strange situation, too, that happened with Kavanaugh and Hirono, obviously, which you have studied that a little bit, too?
I have a little bit. Certainly the lecture that she rightfully gave him on what are Hawaiians, who are Native Americans, what are Native rights. He's written things that show a complete lack of understanding of Native Americans, of Hawaiian rights, of the origins of Hawaii. And this is the little boy we're going to put in the Supreme Court that, you know, make these types of historic decisions. It's mind-boggling, quite frankly.
We've been thrilled today to talk with Bill Snape. He's an assistant dean at American University's Washington College of Law. He's senior counsel with the nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity, which have been on our airwaves before on Helping Hand, talking about their lawsuit to get protection for the Pacific walrus, one of many animals that this Center for Biological Diversity stands up on behalf of as a nonprofit. Bill, I really appreciate your time and sharing some of your analysis on these 18 cases that Brett Kavanaugh handled that were related to wildlife, and really wishing you guys the best over there at the Center for Biological Diversity as well.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And anything you felt that you needed to get in that we didn't cover that you think
I think I got all the big points in. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you.
Dave, thank you. Hope to talk to you soon.
I will. I'll keep you on file for sure. Aloha, brother.
Take care. Thank you so much.